It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey.
God Journey.
Well, I'm off to the Pope's house.
Now, that I wasn't expecting that.
You were.
You and the Pope?
Well, I don't know that I'll see him. I'm not likely to see him, I don't think. But, yeah.
You are going to Italia.
I'm going to Spain first.
Not the Pope's house.
It's closer than here. Anyway, headed to Spain, do some conference stuff over the weekend, and then Sarah and I are meeting another good friends of ours.
Going to Spain over the weekend?
Not this weekend, but when this airs, we'll be thinking about heading that direction. We're going to Spain to actually hang out with some brothers and sisters there that have translated transitions into Spanish and loves me and just a whole lot of people kind of catching a vision for a different way to live in Spain. So we're going to start there for 5-6 days and then we're headed over to Rome. We're going to meet some dear friends from Switzerland coming to meet us there. He's Italian Swiss, but never been to Rome. And I want to go see the Vatican. I've wanted to hang out in that place for a long time.
They can let you in?
Hopefully. You know what? I think they will. I think they really like tourists. And we paid for a tour, so I'm sure.
There you go.
But we could have paid to have a time with the Pope to be at one of his audience things. And I'm like, oh, man, no way. I'm not doing that. But
really?
Yeah, you can actually pay to be in on the Wednesday, whatever they do. So, but I'm looking forward to it. I'm always conflicted in those environments. It's difficult for me to the whole religion thing and the falseness of power and the corruption of religion and how all this was built is just mind-numbing on the one hand. On the other hand, the history, the art, the whatever that's there. So I walk through it very conflicted, but I'm amazed by things like that, like art and architecture. And so I've heard a lot about this place and I've read a lot about it. So we're finally going to walk in St. Peter's Square and in the Basilica and see the Sistine Chapel and do some of that stuff. So I'm kind of interested to see. I may come back Catholic. Who knows?
Oh, well, that'd be cool. That would be really an interesting conversation with you.
That'd be quite a little podcast, wouldn't
it? Yeah, that'd be one heck of a podcast. You know what? I don't know that. I don't know if this is a curveball to you, but when you look at some of the enduringness, I don't think the entire history of the institution of quote the Catholic Church and everything is all bad. I think there's some pretty amazing things that I look at and I go, this is the mixture in humanity. You got some awful things that have been perpetrated in the name of religion and everything else, but there's always been reformer elements within that I think have been impassioned and true. And I look at the challenge and the conflict between the two and you end up going like, wow.
Yeah, and I disagree with that. I'm more talking about the present day, what the power of the papacy and the religion that's Rome. And do good things happen in spite of all that? Yeah, absolutely. But is that what Jesus had in mind when he talked about being a servant and not a leader? I don't think so. I'm sure that's not what
you're. The robes and hats, that's not working for you?
The robes and hats don't work for me, but it's more the pomp and circumstances. I remember when Pope John Paul II died, and during his funeral on TV, they talked about this hallway that the brightest minds, that Da Vinci, Raphael, Michelangelo had designed this hallway for where the public comes in to meet in a private audience with the Pope. And it's a hallway that's designed with this optical illusion that you get on it and it appears to be a certain distance. But because of the way the pillars are spaced, it seems like it stretches on forever. You just don't get to the end of it. And the purpose in designing it was to fully intimidate the person coming to meet the Pope so they would be reduced to tears by the fine they got into his presence. And when I look at that kind of stuff, I go, hold it a minute. And they said even Fidel Castro was overcome in this hallway on his way down to meet the Pope. It's designed just to make you feel like a little worm before you get in to see the Pope. And to think the greatest minds of the day 500 years ago spent time, money, and effort designing that. Do I want to see it? Yes, I want to see it. Am I going to champion it? Is that how we're going to redesign our new driveway? No, it's not. So, yeah. Crazy.
You have some of the biggest fun fact trivia. I never know there was a hallway like that.
I pick up these things.
I guess so.
I read this little snippet in Time last week, and I thought you would probably enjoy this. I loved it. It was an article on cancer and cancer research. And this was a comment from Dr. Ernest Hawk, who's the head of the Division of Cancer Prevention and Population Sciences at MD Anderson Center in
Houston.
He's got a big title.
That's a mouthful.
I don't know how you put that on a business card. But he said this, the cardinal feature of a cancer cell is that it's lost the identity it was born with. Isn't that a great statement?
I know some of those.
Wow. Well, I've talked about in the whole curative view of the cross, the sin is cancer, and the cross, the wrath of God, is chemotherapy curing the cancer in the sun. And then to see, I really do think this is what sin does. Cancer is just a great picture of sin, in that we lose our identity of who God really made us to be in the world. And then, man, you're just a rogue cell among the body of Christ of the world, wrecking havoc and destruction instead of benefiting the world the way God designed us to.
Yeah, my dad's a cancer surgeon, and the reality of cancer cells is they're not just lost their identity. It's that in that loss of identity, they have now fully persuaded themselves about rebellion and attacking everything else that isn't them.
Right.
And so it's like you don't have the neutral. Those are not the malignant ones. Those are just an extra cell. You know, they don't know what they're for, so they're just hanging on. The cancer, when it doesn't know what it is and it's lost its original identity, it then turns on the body with a vengeance and just seeks to devour. And you're just going like, whew, if that isn't a picture of sin.
Yeah, and
I don't know what else. I mean, that is a wonderful, sad, unfortunate reality, but it's a helpful one to realize, wait a minute, that's what that thing does to us.
And partly when you lose your identity, you do become destructive. I think you look at Cain and Abel. You know, he lost the sense of acceptability to God. So what do you got? You strike out at those that you think have it. I mean, it's just, I think it is very, that's why sin is not just something you quietly sit at home and enjoy by yourself. Sin ultimately in the personality becomes destructive in the culture. And why God has come to redeem us out of that and lead us into, was that a ship bell coming into port here or what? What was that?
A newfangled one, yes.
Oh, you got some new ringtone on your...
No, I just didn't turn it off, sorry.
Oh, okay. But what was that?
It was...
Oh, I hear the... Okay. And then the cover of Time magazine, maybe this is related to cancer, but I don't know if you saw it, the cover thing said, why are men of power such pigs?
Yes.
Oh, gosh.
Yes.
And that was even before the latest scandal here in America of some high-powered politician doing things with his phone and pictures that, they just don't need to be doing.
Oh.
So that was before that. This was our dear governor, our former governor, that they were writing the article about. But, you know, I read that cover on the way back from, after I got back from the time in India, and I finished up the Jesus Lens, which we started releasing yesterday, by the way, at the Livestream site, the first of 24 of those sessions. But we finished that talking about the whole monarchy of Israel and how God warned them, I don't want you to have this, but when you have it, here's what's going to happen. The people in power are going to take your sons and daughters. They're going to take your daughters as wives. They're going to kill your sons in battle. They're going to. And God warned us about that thing we've talked about so much, the ultimate corruption of power, which the more power people seem to have, the more privilege they think they're entitled to. And those things, why do people of power are such pigs? Those things seem to go hand in hand historically.
It's all the swine flu.
Well, I didn't see that in the article. Is that what it said?
No,
wow.
No, yeah, I do. I think it's so frustrating to me to just go like, that doesn't have to be the case. It's sad that it is.
It's almost, yeah.
It's sad that it is. I'm not going to kick against that. But it does not have to be the case. And you end up going like, gosh. I mean, because I do know that in terms of the whole gamut of people that I've met, I've met some pretty successful people that I gotta say, gosh, once they have gotten over the hump of this somehow insecure need to achieve, and it's like they've done that, they've put that to rest, they're some of the most delightful people to be around because that's not what is driving them.
But that's, even your comment is saying that's a major thing to lie down.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's not like it's, I know what, here, I'll just tick off a dozen. No, no, I mean, the reality is that I think that is part of the poison in our human soul, that you just go like, why are we driven like that? Why, where does the entitlement sense that once I've gotten to a place of power, now I'm going to take those things for myself that I wanted against wisdom?
It is, but isn't that what God was saying about having a king? Power and the sense of privilege go hand in hand. Are there exceptions that can overcome it? Absolutely. I think there are. There can be people of real character in places of power. Less encouragement about seeing that these days than in times past. It's hard to find the politician in Washington. It's hard to find people who've risen to points of power, significant power. And then people are even, you know, the local pastor who's gotten to be a little megastar, the guy we talked about down in Ventura that's ripping people off money, or, you know, he's having sex with a secretary or something's going on. And people are, they're so shocked by it. And it was something that God very clearly warned us about. It will happen. Even David did some horrible, horrible things. And then they, you know, Solomon and the whole idea of monarchy didn't, God picked the first two. And the first two were really didn't, I mean, David was a great guy, don't get me wrong. Wonderful man after God's own heart. But that sense of privilege moved him to do things that he wasn't doing when he was a shepherd boy hiding in the caves from Saul trying to kill him. And I do think there's a danger to privilege, there's a danger to power that corrupts someone's editing mechanisms inside to say, no, I don't need to go there and I don't need to do that.
I wonder if it's a, if it isn't the way we sort of define those things. Because what is real power? It is not the position rank that is just within institutions that can wield it. You know, when I think of what real power is going on, you're looking at me like, what?
No,
I guess I look at when I have a Jesus definition of what those things are, you know, to whom much is given, much is required. I guess through that lens, I have a hard time looking at, quote, privilege that doesn't immediately come with responsibility. I can't understand power apart from the servanthood that surrounds the gift and the reason for it. And that's really a Jesus lens on that. You take that off and, oh my gosh, you know, this is, I now have the power to do to you. And I look at that and it's like, well, gosh, how do people get put into those positions? What happens to their soul? And I mean, how did you ascend that hill? And what is that hill? And I look at so much of our human institutions and it's like, yuck. The pathways to get there, it's not what floats to the surface. We all know what floats to the surface.
Okay, be careful.
Okay.
Be careful.
So, I think that's part of how I kind of struggle with, you look at this, it's like, gosh, Lord, I think we've got really poor definitions or poor grasp of what that is. When Jesus says, you know, I didn't come to be served. You think of rank. Well, it doesn't get any higher than him. And he comes with a sense of, you know, I look at, if there are modern day apostles, they're the folks on the bottom of the pile. They're the ones down in the trenches that are, they're probably not known. They're functioning and doing the work of what that foundation is. And you may have some bozo at the top.
I grant you that. I get the email all the time from people. I got one for this week from a man in Scotland wanting to know, who are the primary influences of your theology? He wanted a list of books or whatever. I said, you know, the primary influences of my theology are not books. They're people. They're men and women I've known who are down the road further than me on this journey. None of them I know who I really have said, man, I'd point to that life, that life, that life. None of them have a website. None of them have a book published. None of them put a podcast out there. So I can say, hey, we can go pick it up here, go pick it up there. I think that's really true. But going back to what I think corrupts people about power, that we've talked about the ring, my precious, from Lord of the Rings. The ability to use some kind of human mechanism of power, which I grant you isn't real power, and I think that's what made people nervous around Jesus. He didn't have worldly power in the sense that everyone else around him had it, but he had a greater authority that disturbed a lot of people because of just the way he lived and the command of his life. But I think part of, in the world's systems of power, and I think here's what's seductive, because I've watched this enough from the sidelines, it's the sycophants that get near. It's the staff of a congressman. It's the staff of the president. It's, you get power by sucking up to power. And so there's this pedestaled kind of thing that happens where people who benefit from knowing you keep pushing you that you can do no wrong, and you're just the best answer to that.
It puts you in a place of isolation as opposed to real engagement.
And unreality. Yeah, you live in with a false you, and suddenly you think it's the real you. But people do that, and I think when people do that, they do get the sense that they're untouchable. And surprisingly enough, you know, yes, Governor Spitzer from, you know, New York lost his job and he's caught consorting with prostitutes. But a few years later, he's right back on a TV show doing whatever. There's that whole power elite of the culture that doesn't seem to care. If your Q rating is high enough, it doesn't matter that you've done whatever you've done or betrayed the public trust, or it doesn't matter because we're going to use you for something else. And you can step right back into that role. And I think we've seen that's as old as the Bible, and you go back to the same realities there. And I think it would at least give us pause to say, wow, I don't know that power in a worldly sense is an attractive thing or a helpful thing. Which Jesus, when he says the greatest among you will be the servant of all, you know, don't look for the places of lording over. I just think that's great stuff, and it gets lost because we do perceive influence as power, the strength of our institutions and who's in charge of them. And that has a certain weight. What does it say? That Jesus said the things that are, I forget their language, things that are highly valued among men are despised in the eyes of God. Something like that. And God just has a whole opposite value system that we get sucked into. And it's,
yeah, I think, you know, it's fascinating to me that, you know, you look at a person like Joseph in the Bible, and pretty sure Joseph was not sitting in prison aspiring to the palace. You know?
He might have been.
I wasn't there.
Pick me. Okay.
I look at that and you just go like, it seems to me that God has a wonderful way of placing people that is not their ambition. And because of a lack of it, they're not grabbing for, reaching for, and because, I mean, one of the most remarkable things about Jesus, he did not consider equality with God something to grasp, to hold on, to have to assert. Yeah. And yet he had it.
Right.
And I look at the fact that, you know, in the book of Esther, and all of a sudden God somehow decides to place one of his in a place that could then appeal at a moment that was needed. I look at that and I go like, I think it's awesome that in spite of the true reality that power corrupts, God still is redemptively at work in hearts that are available, that are not consumed by that, and can be the influencer. I think of the little girl that helped, what is it, you know, one of the great, what's the guy that got healed by dunking himself in the river? I'm blanking on him.
Back in Elijah's day?
Yeah.
Naaman?
Yes.
No, that was Naaman.
Well, yeah. Well,
that was an Esther guy.
The
I don't know, you got me, man. You stopped me.
Sword drills are a little slow here this morning.
Wow, we didn't do our Bible study before.
I did.
That was it.
But what I'm remembering is that it's a little servant girl that was a Hebrew, that when he was willing to just like, oh, I went to go see the prophet, and he told me to just go do this, and he was totally offended because he wasn't received in the rank and file that he was. It's like, you should know who I am. And it was sort of like, you just got this, go dunk yourself in the river. And this, and a little Hebrew girl that was there to be able to speak wisdom. Well, if he had asked you to do some really hard thing, you would have done it. But it's just this thing. And so out of the humility of that moment, she directs his heart into his healing. And you just go like, gosh, Lord, you don't need the positions. You need the hearts that in those moments can deliver the wisdom of what needs to be done. I mean, I look at Joseph in a moment where Egypt, the most powerful nation on the planet at the time, was needing wisdom to how to preserve and protect the whole lot. And God found it right in a little prison, and he was able to bring it right to the palace. I love that.
He'd already been in the palace. Got kicked out.
Different palace.
Yeah, but kicked out for...
Falsely kicked out.
Being falsely accused by a woman who wanted to use him. Yeah, Joseph is kind of the antithesis to what we're talking about. But I like that God's able to do that with us. I think Luke 14 gets to that, where he said, don't rush in and grab the head tables at the banquet. Don't do it. Just take the last place. If the master of the banquet wants to move you, he'll move you.
Yeah.
And it's better to be moved as he desires to move you.
Better to be called up front than be set back down.
Than be pointed out from the stage. Oh, my gosh. But you look at some of these famous leaders in America, and you've got to hurt for what their families are going through as all this is being lived out in the glare of the Klieg lights, you know? And that's, I just go, wow, they don't deserve that. But so there's a compassion that I have for these people that are in that kind of place, but there's just a profound sense of why do people continue, this is a Time article was getting after, why do people to continue to betray the public trust with a sense of careless living and think they're entitled to it and they can hide it? As one guy said, they're bold and brave in front of the cameras as long as they're lying about it, and as soon as they get honest, they melt in tears like little girls, which is kind of a slam on little girls. But I thought, wow, that's an interesting observation.
I think our whole political structure is it's a little odd when you're going, gosh, right now they're all, you know, you got all these people trying to figure out if they should run. And it's like, man, can I stand up to the scrutiny? And it's like, really, we think there's someone out there that is so virtuous that we're going to make them president? Like, here's Mr. Virtue, and I'm going like, I'm pretty sure we don't have any of those.
Right.
Or if they do, they're not really aspiring to this. And so it just seems to be a crazy little conundrum of going, there's nobody out there that really wants to go through that kind of scrutiny because, in essence, quote, the public trust, I'm going like, I don't know. I would love for our presidents to be virtuous. It doesn't seem like we've ever had any. I mean, that might be a really painful, wrong thing to say so brazenly broad.
Let's just say we haven't had one in a while.
I don't want to denigrate everybody.
Yeah, really. You want to take Abraham Lincoln down seriously? George Washington? Really?
We just weren't there. The reality is I go like, golly, I think whenever you have a human being, there has to be a great, you know, taking a grain of salt that just says, that's going to be a flawed human.
Absolutely.
There's not a one that isn't. So why do we expect... I mean, I really think we set them up for some of this great fall stuff because it's almost as if we help them to a really inappropriate conclusion about themselves.
Yeah, but I think it goes beyond just flawed individuals. We're all that.
Yeah.
We're all flawed individuals. But when people pretend they're faithful to a spouse they're not faithful to, when people aspire to an ethical morality for others that they don't live themselves, to me, that's where
there's
the bigger
problem is there.
Yeah, it's not just people are flawed. Yes, we're all flawed. No, I wouldn't want my worst moments paraded before the world. I would not. So I'm not running for office. So it's not perfection, but it's at least the integrity to live your life on the outside as close to, or in the inside as close to what you're saying it is on the outside. And when it's just when a life is just duplicitous, I'll say one thing, I'll live another in my private life. That to me goes beyond just flawed. That's just it is flawed for sure, but it's the kind of thing that just says.
That's the deceit that undermines the good of just about anything.
It does. And power seems to strike. And like you said, see the people who desire it? That could be part of it. But you've got guys like David, and I don't know if they were really, or Saul, really desiring it. But once they got it, I think what God was saying, there's just something here that asks of a man or a woman more than he or she can give. That it's that there's a corrupting nature to it. Are there exceptions that are find a depth of character before they get there? Yeah, there are. But
thankfully, there's a couple.
There are. There aren't many. And I couldn't name you one today, but I'm accepting the fact that you know six of them.
There you go.
Woo. I'm going to buy that.
You know, I think one of the things that I would draw as a conclusion out of just that, you know, sort of disappointing reality is the fact that I don't think a man is supposed to sit on that throne. Not in our lives.
Exactly.
And I think the real problem is, unless we get to know, I mean, we've said this in podcasts way past, but it's as if we're wired to relate to a human in that role. And there's only one that fits that, and that his name is Jesus.
Yeah.
And if I don't have that point of connection where it's like, if God is so beyond me, in my name of high worship of him, I push him that far away from me, oh, so, but I don't have a sense of relational intimacy with that. I'm going to look for someone to actually be that.
Yeah.
And I think that's the incredible downfall, because there is no man I know who can do that. I love that. I'm not disappointed by that. I'm going right. Like, absolutely, hallelujah. Stop putting someone on that throne. There is one who can be there who will govern righteously. It's not me. It's not anyone else I know, but it is Jesus. And when he's there, gosh, does it work right? I don't feel a false need to rule from there. I understand it as it flows from him with the sense of, if I have a place of power, if there is a realm of privilege, it comes with a servant responsibility for that. That is not, ooh, blessings, perks for me.
Yeah.
It really is, I've been given an opportunity from which to live in this upside-down kingdom. To whom much is given, much is required. It really is not something that I think the Bible ever suggests aspire to.
No, I agree with you. And I think his warning to Israel, when they were wanting a king, he was saying, no, I want to be that king. You're rejecting me. That was the point of it.
Yeah.
And I think what you're saying now is exactly the same thing. Whenever we put some kind of human being around the orbit of our life. Someone tried to do this with me yesterday. Just offer me a whole list of prayers, and I need your prayers. I have no one else around. Will you pray for me, blah, blah, blah. And what I wrote back to them was, you know, you have a better intercessor for you than I am. And that's the high priest Jesus, who's at the right hand of God the Father. And this idea that, she had lost her priest over here somewhere, and she was looking for a new one.
Right.
And I'm like, I don't want to be that guy for you, because A, I'm not that guy. And after that, there's no B. I'm just not that guy.
Right.
I can pray for people, absolutely. And I do enjoy praying for people, but I don't enjoy people putting my prayers on a pedestal that's A, different from their prayers, or B, not really clinging onto his. He's the one that intercedes for us before the Father. And when we lose that sense of Jesus being our active, present high priest, we end up, whether it's the local pastor, to the author, to the evangelist guy, to a politician, whatever, we put our hopes in someone else that ultimately is going to disappoint us.
Well, yeah, I mean, I look at the red-lettered reality of how Jesus looked upon leadership and positions of power and rank, and I just, it's so frustrating. I have shelves full of books on leadership, and you sit there like, what did Jesus have to say? One, don't call yourselves leaders. Don't call yourselves fathers. Don't call yourselves teachers. Well, what are you saying? We don't have leaders? No, we do. Do we not have fathers? No, we do. Am I thought somebody's a teacher? No. There's some that teach, and there's a gift of that. But he's really trying to say, you know what? There's only one who is that father. There's only one who really is the leader. There's only one who is that teacher. And if you don't have that straight, the road does not lead to where you think it does.
Yeah, and if you have that straight, number one, you won't aspire to be that for other people. And number two, you won't be trying to put someone else in your life there to make it up to you.
That's what it's like, you know, warning, danger, you know, DEFCON 4, when you get someone that is so into leadership, but they somehow don't lead with those three for me, I end up going like, dude, when are you going to get to the safe zone where I kind of realize you're not trying to ascend the hill and sit on that throne?
Yeah.
And it's the folks that I think have been the most empowering to others when they're not putting some surrogate savior right in between them and Jesus. It's like what you did with that person, they're wanting help. You pray for me. Well, I'm pretty sure you're not callous to say, nope, can't pray, won't do it.
I haven't got time.
Yeah, sorry. I think it's always that sense of going like, you know what, unless you put Jesus there, this is not going to go as well as you think. This is going to be a disappointment somewhere.
Yeah.
And I think there just isn't enough, I don't think, within the leading, directing, nurturing, developing part of the body of Christ, there isn't enough of drawing people to the fact that, you know what, we got one shepherd. We got a whole bunch of underlings and who are in that role. We got one shepherd. Let's lead people to that place of direct relationship, not the indirect priestly system that we have of the old. I mean, that's the thing. When I got tons of friends in ministry. I'm just like, guys, have you ever read the New Testament? Did you ever look at the veil that was rent? Did you ever understand that Jesus was not here to rebuild that thing? And it's as if that is a profound source of blindness that is like, well, no, that's what I've been called to. It's like, really? I don't get that. For me, it's like, I'm sure, guess what? In my history, there was a point in time I did. I look back at it now, I'm like, no. I mean, one of the reasons I got bounced out is I was so salacious in believing that of a leaderless Christianity. And it's like, no, it's just, I don't think we're supposed to be in those roles of titles and offices and the way we do it.
Even the word leadership really isn't in the New Testament the way some of those things have been translated. It's really about people who facilitate. And I don't think it's difficult. At least I'll say it isn't for me. I can be around someone 5-10 minutes and get the sense of whether this person thinks they're above me talking down or whether we're genuine brothers who are sharing a journey. It doesn't mean a person could be further down the road than me, but I know people further down the road than me don't take that place of exalting themselves above me or trying to be my leader. They're just being a brother alongside. And the authority that they have doesn't come from, I'm a leader and you've got to respond to me as your leader. It comes from the fact that, boy, what they say makes sense and resonates deeply. And there's the authority of a life that isn't about, you must follow me. In fact, the people who I know who get this part of the journey wouldn't lead anything, wouldn't want to, not trying to. They might facilitate something, help something happen for other people, but never talk from above, never talk down. And I think that's valuable. I know that's one of those things, like I said, I've been kind of rewriting some old stuff I've written, and it's got that old top-down Wayne talking through most of it. So, whoa, I've got to rewrite more of this than I thought. And it just reminded me, man, it's easy to be caught up in that. And I think that's how you get into that servant leadership kind of, for the good of other people, you're willing to do X, Y, and Z over other people, make them do what you think best. And it's a corruption of everything Jesus wanted us to live and know with each other and how we walk alongside each other. And so don't strive to be a priest for other people and don't strive to find one. And I think that's why I wrote back this person the way I did yesterday. I sensed they wanted me to be a priest for them that they had lost in some other place in their life. And I didn't want to just say, gosh, really, I don't know you and I don't have time and this doesn't work real well from this distance and email and all that stuff. I really wanted to help them see, doggone, you're looking for something you already have. He dwells in you. Jesus is your intercessor first and foremost. I love people praying for other people, but not when I need a priest to pray for me because my prayers aren't going to get there of their own. So I'm all for coming alongside people. Love that. But coming at a place of letting them put me in that place that Jesus deserves. Man, I don't serve people by doing that.
No, and I think it's not even that neutral. It's not that I don't serve people. I do a great disservice when I allow that, because there really does have the unintentional distancing. I mean, if I play Bible answer man for somebody, they'll let me.
Yeah.
And what does that then do? It has the unfortunate outcome of where they end up feeling invalidated. Well, it's a good thing I was able to talk to him.
Right.
As if, well, you might want to check out if what I'm saying is actually true. I believe it. There's no intention to deceive. But it's not going to matter if I'm wrong and you didn't check for yourself. It doesn't help either of us. And I think that's where it's like, what I see in the pages of the New Testament is the immediacy of face-to-face. It's like, guess what? Moses was leading all of Israel and bringing them into the Promised Land. Well, what was the Promised Land? Even in the wilderness, it was that face-to-face relationship. That's what we're called into. Jesus is here to say, hey, we can go direct.
Yeah.
The indirect priestly system is like, that's done.
Yeah, and when I become your surrogate to Jesus or your intermediary to Jesus, I'm robbing you of the most precious thing I have. And that's a relationship with him. And I'd much rather be alongside helping you see that and experience that than I would, no, I'll do that for you so you can, I can save you the time, energy, whatever.
And write your check too.
Yeah, I'm actually robbing you of the best thing I have. And I just wouldn't do it. I want people to know Jesus the way I'm growing to know him and find him to be that certain connection. And then, and that won't diminish your community with other people. I don't think it does that. I think it encourages it all the more. I love hanging out with people who are loving the God I love and are communing about him together like we do on these podcasts and I do with other people in my life. That's nourishing, exciting, challenging. But that's because it replaces him. It's because it sustains and supplements and encourages that very life to deepen.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest challenges is, I think you can even see this in the Old Testament, you know, moment where, you know, Moses' job is to lead Israel out of captivity and to bring them to Mount Sinai, where God's desire is to speak to all of them.
Not going to do it. Don't want to have it.
He brought them. Yeah. They're all there. And God starts to speak and everyone freaks out.
Yeah.
Like, hey, change your plans. Hey, Mo, this whole talking direct to God, nah, not so cool for us.
Not for us.
What we would like is, why don't you go talk to him? And we promise, come back, tell us, we'll do everything that you, and you're just going like, that's it. That had to be one of the one moments in heaven that was a real massive disappointment. I mean, just think of that moment where it's like, God speaks, everyone freaks. And they're saying, nah.
We don't want to be with you.
Yeah.
Let Moses eat.
Can we have the goodies and can we have the promised land? I mean, just think of, I find one of the most amazing things where God and Moses are talking and God's kind of saying, you know what? Why don't you guys just go ahead and you do the promised land. You can have it all. Everything I promised, right there, it's yours. Go on. I'm not going. And what's with Moses that he goes, well, then we're not going.
You're not going. I'm not going.
And you just got to think of how many people in the camp would have, if they had heard that conversation, what? What do you mean? He's not negotiating for me. I sadly know many people to whom I think they would have not, in that moment, sided with Moses' wisdom. I think they would have gone like, okay, see ya. And I go like, golly, we have not brought people into the promise giver. We've declared what the promised land is, and I think people, well, I want that. And it's like, sure, I want to go to heaven, but well, do you want to know him now? Oh, yeah. And it's like, what's up with that? That's where I think a lot of this goes weird. It's because we don't have people drawing people into relationship.
Yeah, that's a major demarcation between the Old Covenant and what Jesus accomplished on the cross and the New. Is the Old, that sense of shame was so attendant that God was scary to be with. So God, I think even the temple, did God really live in the Holy of Holies, really different than he was living in people's bedrooms and in their houses with them? We know better now. God allowed them to think he was in the temple so they could feel somewhat safe. He's nearby, but he's not seeing my life. I really think until the cross came and Jesus could resolve that shame in our heart, we really didn't feel safe with him. We really did want to go in full retreat. And unfortunately, people who haven't really understood what the cross accomplished for them still finds God a scary presence to be near and finds themselves intimidated instead of endeared to God. And I think the whole point of the Gospels was we get to be endeared to him now as Abba children of Abba. We get to be little kids to an Abba, and we're safer in his presence than any place else we could be on the planet. And that message somehow has gotten lost for a lot of people. But to me, that's core to what the gospel is and core to what Jesus accomplished on the cross. And that's why I want to encourage people to live there. Oh, and one more thing before you go. I want to thank those of you who helped us build the orphanage in Kenya. It is open, up and running, and operating well, and we appreciate that. At the same time, however, we offered to help take care of those kids for the first couple of years, and we're needing some funds to help do that, both to pay the staff and to feed the kids. And add to that the fact that that part of Kenya has been part of a drought in the last year. They got 50% of the normal rainfall during the rainy season, and the crops were only 20% of what they were expecting. Thus, food prices have gone through the roof. And they need help not only feeding those kids, but also other widows and orphans in that network of people throughout that part of Kenya. If you have some money, would like to direct it that way, you can check out my blog at lightstream.org or write us from the contact page of the God Journey, and we'll set you up with how to help and be part of that offering that we want to send later this month to help bless the kids there.
Thank you for traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodsjourney.com.